Welcome to this AAT podcast. My name is John Cullodine, and I am an accountant in practice in Eastbourne, and my practice specialises in the not-for-profit sector. My subject is an outline of an independent examination. Long gone is the day when charities could do what they like. Some will still recall the days of pinning a simple receipts and payments account on the notice board, with the trustees not subject to any form of accountability or scrutiny. The ever-growing legislation in recent years highlights the government's thinking in this area, now known as the third sector, and I'm sure we're going to find that increasingly the Charity Commission will be investigating and probing the activities of charities. The Charities Act 1993 first brought in the concept of independent examination for unincorporated charities, whilst company charities, technically companies limited by guarantee, were only subject to external scrutiny when their total income and expense levels took them into the audit regime. Although, of course, there's always been a lower level review report known as the Accountants Report Rules for incorporated charities with income above £90,000. It is pleasing to note, although possibly reducing my own professional fees, that recent legislation resulting from the Charities Act 2006 and the Companies Act 2006 has standardised this sector considerably. Most of what I've got to say in this broadcast relates to the new reporting requirements and relates to accounting periods beginning on and after the 1st of April 2008. From that date, all charities, whether incorporated or unincorporated, will be subject to an independent examination if their total income each year is above £10,000. Charities with total income and resources in excess of £500,000, or gross assets in excess of £2.8 million, and income above £100,000, will be subject to audit by a registered auditor. These thresholds are destined to be reviewed again next year, and we expect that the new form of charity, called the Charitable Incorporated Organisation, CIO for short, will be included in this. We still await the detailed rules and regulations for this new style of legal entity, expected later this year. Much has been promised, but still little delivered. Personally, I see little benefit to the new CIO, especially for existing charitable companies who already have limited liability protection, though incorporated charities will benefit by changing over. It never ceases to amaze me how even in the current world there is confusion as to what is an audit and what is an independent examination. It was not long ago you found the expression audited and found correct, still typed on financial accounts. I'm glad to say those days are now gone, but it still brings a smile to my face when I see account certificates like this. So here we are today. All charities are subject to independent examination if their income is above £10,000 per annum, incorporated or unincorporated, to a level of £500,000 per annum. The Charity Commission have become very prolific in recent years with their publications and amount of data which is available on their website, and the Practitioner's Bible is the Charity Commission publication CC32, which can be downloaded very easily or ordered accordingly. Those of us who have worked in an accountant's practice will be quite conversant with an audit and the red tape and regulations which go with it, with the substantial amounts of work involved, little appreciated by commercial organisations, let alone charities with strict budgets. Independent examination of charity records to a level of £500,000 is welcomed, as this does take out the necessity of an audit for the vast majority of charities. An independent examination is a lighter regime, a softer touch, but most importantly for the practitioner come accountant signing the certificate, you are not stating that the accounts represent a true and fair view, albeit the trustees still have this responsibility when signing the accounts. What you are giving them is more of a negative assurance. It is less onerous form of scrutiny and provides less assurance in both the depth of work carried out and the wording of the examiner's certificate, which forms part of the annual report and accounts. The independent examination report provides negative assurances that there is no evidence of 1. Failure to keep proper accounting records, 2. Accounts not being in accordance with the records, 3. Accounts failing to comply with the Charities Act, 4. Other information that needs disclosing. In addition, independent examinations require to report where 1. There is material expenditure or actions that appear to be outside of the charity's objects. 2. Information has not been provided to the examiner. And 3. Information in the annual report is inconsistent with the accounts. It is important that the independent examiner is independent of the charity. He or she has to have the ability to undertake an examination with an understanding of accounting principles, and more particularly a knowledge of charity accounting, and have practical experience. But of course, this is a chicken and egg situation. You only gain experience by doing the job. And the examiner is able to carry out a competent examination. When the total income of the charity is above £250,000 per annum, the independent examiner has to be a qualified accountant, belonging to one of the various accounting bodies, which includes accounting technicians. Below that level, you need only demonstrate the ability, experience and competence to do the job. Remember, spouses, partners, relatives, etc. are not independent. The Charity Commission booklet, CC32, sets out the 10 directions which the examiner has to follow and is an excellent publication. However, it seems to me that there are 4 important areas which should always be considered firstly, which can avoid embarrassment and difficulty later on. These simple but important areas cover what I consider would be the risk areas for the examiner and where damages could be sought for matters going wrong. First, the number 1, always examine the objects clause and constitution of the charity. It is important to make sure that the charity is acting within its objects clauses and the trusts of the charity. If the objects state that the charity is for the relief and welfare of dogs, then that is what it can only do. It cannot get involved with other animals. The Charities Act 2006 brought in a completely new list of what constitutes charitable activities, including the old heads of education, religion, and the relief of poverty. And many old trust deeds are drawn up with those original 3 heads, plus a general clause for any other charitable purpose, which obviously covers a multitude of sins. However, failure to act within the trusts and objects of the charity is a major breach and a reportable action, which an independent examiner would have to make to the Charity Commission. The vast majority of actions brought by the Charity Commission are in this area and can involve legal action with restitution required of the trustees. Secondly, review the charity for restricted incoming monies. Monies given to a charity for specific projects or identified areas of work are regarded as restricted funds, and records of this income and expenditure have to be kept separate. Ascertain the restricted funds at the beginning and the systems for identifying income and outgoings. Likewise, designated funds will need to be kept separate also. Thirdly, ensure that the charity accounts comply with the Charities Act, Statement of Recommended Practice 2005, and other related legislation. Try and utilise compliance checklist software, which can protect you. Fourthly, always review the activities of the trustees, making sure they have no private benefit. If they are paid salaries, are they allowed to be paid as per the memorandum and articles or constitution? Ensure that transactions with family members or connected persons are disclosed and are above board. With those four points in mind, how do we then go about our independent examination? As with audits, planning is essential, and perhaps would constitute a sizeable chunk of your work. Always have a current file for the year's work, plus a permanent file for information which needs to be stored and referred to from time to time, as with auditing. Archiving of files, especially permanent data, is not something left for juniors in the office, as I found recently to my horror. Prepare your independent examination program. There is not a lot of software out there for independent examinations, but I'm sure this will increase as time goes on. Or why not write your own, as my firm has done? No two charities are ever the same, unlike your average pub or high street shop, so you will need to adapt any standardised programmes. It should be noted that independent examinations are for charities below £500,000 income, but invariably, as well as doing the independent examination, you may well be preparing the statutory accounts. There are only going to be a small number of charities at that level who will prepare their own accounts and only ask you to be the examiner. Do not forget you may even be given a brown paper bag of papers to prepare the accounts and to do the independent examination. These cases still exist. I recall, as a junior, the arrival of the brown paper bag job from the local farmer and the mixture of elements contained in that parcel. Materiality and common sense should prevail, and experience in this sector is essential. The independent examiner's standard certificate refers to the need to keep proper accounting records. Accounts being in accordance with the records and the accounts complying with the Charities Act. What does that mean in reality? It means the charity needs to have good prime records for the examiner to review and consider. The accounting records need to tie up with the accounts, and the accounts need to follow the legislation. Therefore, remember, if you are preparing the statutory accounts yourself, a substantial amount of the work has already been done. If you are preparing accounts from a trial balance, then a cross-check and reference to the original prime records will be necessary for you to be satisfied that the trial balance can be relied upon. You cannot expect a charity with income of only, say, £50,000 per annum to have perfect prime records, proper ledgers, trial balance, and prepared accounts. Be realistic. Quite often accounts may just have been prepared from an analysis of the bank statements. Obviously, the bigger the charity, the better the record should be. There is a wealth of accounting software on the market these days, some of which can be adapted for smaller charities, and indeed a limited amount of bespoke charity software is also available. However, the reality is very often, unless the treasurer is a skilled bookkeeper, the records can be a nightmare. You still need to be prepared to see an old-style Guildhall cash book and lots of bank accounts. Some charities still maintain control of their restricted funds by having a separate bank account for each. Always encouraged by the local bank manager, keen to accrue brownie points from his superiors. Therefore, by reviewing the prime records and their adequacy and following through to a trial balance stroke ledger, and then if cross-checked to the annual accounts, or, if not, those accounts prepared by you, you will find you have carried out much of the work. Client's checklist software will give you the assurance that the accounts are in accordance with the legislation, and the job is done. If you then couple this with a review of the memorandum and articles, or the constitution, to ensure that the charity is working within its objects, making sure that the trustees are not benefiting directly or indirectly, then you're on safe ground with the majority of the work completed and very little risk remains with you as the independent examiner. Before we finish this broadcast, let us just consider the 10 specific directions of the Charity Commission as set out in publication CC32. Direction 1. The examination of the accounting thresholds. Make sure that the charity does need an independent examination and not an audit. Always look at cut-off, year-end transactions to make sure that the thresholds are not being breached or avoided deliberately. It can be tempting, and is human nature, for charity officers to hold back banking monies to keep themselves within certain thresholds. Review the first few months of the next accounting period, and particularly watching out for netting off of transactions. Direction 2, documentation. Always record your work. As I've already said, a current file and a permanent file and a proper work program is desirable. Record conclusions reached and problems arising. Direction 3, understanding the charity. Very simply, make sure you know what the charity sets out to do and how it seeks to achieve those objectives. Why not flowchart the organisation, as well as flowcharting the accounting system? A simple piece of work, but a major piece of your independent examination. Who authorises the invoices? Who signs the cheques? Who banks the money? Who makes the decisions? Areas which need to be looked at. Direction 4, accounting records. Again, I have mentioned this. Make sure there is a cash book or appropriate software, proper bank accounts, nominal ledger, etc. Direction 5, comparison with the accounting records. If you have prepared the accounts, then much of this is done. But do not forget materiality. Sampling techniques can be applied in this area. Direction 6, analytical procedures. A simple analytical review of the accounts to highlight changes or movements. Why is income up when wages have not increased? A simple question, but the answer may form a central part of your examination. Where is the new capital equipment? Why is rent increased significantly when there are no premises? All questions that need to be answered and form part of your working papers. Direction 7, form and content of accounts. Obviously, the accounts have to comply with legislation, and an understanding of the Charities Act and the Companies Act is essential. Do not forget that when doing an independent examination of a company, accrual accounts are mandatory, whatever the level of income of the charity. If the charity is unincorporated, then a receipts and payments account can be prepared up to a level £100,000 per annum of income. This has to be supplemented by a statement of assets and liabilities, which does not necessarily have to balance. Direction 8, accounting policies, estimates and judgments. These should be documented. This obviously applies more to accrual accounting. Accounting policies are fairly standard these days and will need to be followed and consistently applied. Again, always document your conclusions and judgments. Direction 9, the trustee annual report. This has to follow the recommendations of the SORP 2005. It is important to make sure that the accounts are consistent with the trustee's annual report. One usually finds in reality that it is often the accountant or independent examiner who writes the trustee's annual report for the smaller charity, although obviously it is the responsibility of the trustees to ensure that the accounts tie up with the trustee's annual report and reflect what is actually happening within the charity. The trustees will often write up a charity in an effort to raise funds. Also, be very aware that in the world in which we live, funding now is everything, and charities are competing against each other to find appropriate funding. Therefore, it's not unknown to have a poor balance sheet with low level reserves and cash balances so that they can attract additional funding. Some charities will hide monies and bank accounts outside the balance sheet. I've come across this in practice, and even know a situation where legacies given to a charity for the general funds were hidden away in the restricted funds. If it were a designated fund, it would have been fine. But to call it a restricted fund, no, never, and potentially illegal. Direction 10, Examiner's Report. This is what you sign. Do not take it lightly, and make sure you understand what you are signing. If you have to do a qualified report, there are guidelines and examples in the Charity Commission booklet CC32. Make sure you have a suitable engagement letter so that both the charity and you know the extent of the work necessary and the potential liability involved. In addition to these 10 directions, do not forget the statutory duty to report. A difficult area and very onerous, but there is a duty to report to the Charity Commission matters which have been of material significance but in breach of legislation, and particularly actions outside the trusts of the charity. I wish you well. Independent examinations are a growing part of an accountancy practice and also a useful means of supplementing your income and helping the community. Thank you very much for listening to this AAT podcast.